We're up to Torah Kuf Chof Gimel in Likutei Moran Tanina. In our Likutei Morans, it's page 102, the right-hand column, about three-quarters way down the page. Rav Nosson Zal writes, Omar, Rabbeinu Zal said, Shemikvah eino mazekes klal, that going to the mikvah does not harm a person in any way whatsoever. And a doctor who will tell a person that going to the mikvah harms a person, einoi doctor klal, is not a doctor at all whatsoever. Now obviously Rabbeinu Zal here was referring to the mikvahs that were most common in those days, and as is pretty common today, that generally when we talk about a mikvah, we're talking about something that's hot, where it's known that the water there generally is assumed to be hot. This is not to say that in those days all mikvahs were heated. As there were cases where people went to the lakes, to tovel in the lake, whether it was winter time, or other situations where there wasn't heat available and it would be freezing cold. But when Rabbeinu Zal is starting to talk here, he's referring at first to a warm or hot mikvah, as we're going to see in a minute. So Rabbeinu Zal said, a doctor that'll tell you that mikvah harms the person isn't a doctor at all. Adarabba, just the opposite. Tvilas mikvah toivo ma'oid lebrias haguf. Toiveling in a hot mikvah or in a warm mikvah is very, very good for a person's health. Rabbeinu Zal explains now, and this is a course in science. There are many people that are aware of this information based on things that they've learned from, learned about in biology, learning about the body. Rabbeinu Zal explains, Ki yesh nekovim ktanim harbe begufo shel odom. Because on the surface of a person's body, there are many, 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 many small holes that are called pores, P-O-R-E-S, that's the English word for it. And these are small holes that you see at some places on the skin and some places you don't, but these are thousands or millions of tiny holes on the skin of the body. V'heim mikvei hazeo. These holes are actually associated with the sweat that comes out from a person. Shederech shom yoytze hazeo min odom. It's through these holes, through these pores, that the sweat leaves the body of a person. When a person exerts themselves, or it's very hot, and a person feels themselves becoming very warm inside, there is a poisonous type of liquid called sweat that comes out, that leaves the body through these tiny holes. And this is something that's visible sometimes if a person is in a steam room or something like that where it's very hot, and a person looks at the skin of their body, they'll see slowly these tiny droplets of water starting to form near these small holes on the skin. Rabbeinu Zal says, Vehim tzrichim liftoyach, and these pores of the skin must be opened up. Ki im nistatmin nikveh hazeyo, because if these pores through which the sweat is supposed to leave the body become closed up, yuchal lecholesh, a person can become very, very weak from this, velipoil lechulsha chas v'shalom, a person can actually become ill, become sick, because of the fact that this sweat, this poisonous sweat, is not being allowed to leave the body. Just as when a person has to go to the bathroom, it's because there is a sorting out process that takes place within the body. This is one of the miracles of Hashem. This is one of the things that should make it easier for a Jew to believe that there is a Hashem. How else is it conceivable? How else would it be possible for a human being to eat food and for such an unbelievably spectacular process to take place within the body, where there is a sorting out that takes place, where the good part of the food gets absorbed into the body, not only absorbed, but it gets distributed to different places in the body. And the Zohar HaKadosh describes that the quality of the food that's given to the heart is a much choicer quality. It's grade A or grade A plus one compared to the type of quality of the food that's distributed to lesser organs of lesser importance. This is part of the Nefloyes HaBoireh, the wonders of Hashem, that Hashem makes this happen within the body. And so too, there is a certain portion of the body that's eliminated from the body, that's sorted out as being waste matter, something that can't help the body, and that's removed automatically, kaviyachol, through the greatness of Hashem. Hashem has given the body this power to be able to sort, do this sorting out, and figure out what goes where, and eliminate waste from the body. Now, this elimination of waste takes place through several different ways. There's egestion, there's excretion, there are times that a person vomits up certain portions of the food, there are times that it's removed from the body in a more natural way, in a more normal way, and then there is this sweat, where there is this type of poisonous liquid that leaves the body through the pores in the skin. And Rabbi Nizal says, Valyidei Tvilo B'mayim, and through a person immersing themselves completely in water, Niftochin Nikvei Hazeya, these pores are opened up, they open up, V'ze Toiv Ma'oid L'Briyas HaGuf, and this is something that's very, very, very good for a person's health. Rak. Now the question is, when does this take place? What temperature of water are we talking about? Those people that are familiar with biology know that this usually refers to warm water or hot water. And you'll notice, again, a person goes into a steam room, you'll note that the nature of the heat is such that it opens up these holes in the body. So too, when a person washes their hands or takes a shower, a hot shower, a person finds that they sweat as a result. They sweat, and this sweat is removed from the body, and then a person is told that after taking a hot shower, the heat of the hot water causes the pores to open up and to release this poisonous sweat, which once it's washed away from the person with soap or with the water itself, then a person is supposed to rinse with cool water or cold water, which causes the pores to close up again. Because normally these holes are supposed to be kept closed, otherwise they could allow certain germs or infections to come into the body through that way. So they have to be opened up at certain times and given a chance to allow this sweat, this poisonous sweat, to escape from the body and then closed up again. So Rabbi Nizal says that therefore a person immersing themselves in a warm mikveh, this causes these sweat glands to open up, and this is very, very beneficial for the person's health. Rak sheloyi yuamayim karim biyoser. However, it's advisable that the water should not be very cold. In other words, even in cool water, this can also take place. Cool water, warm water, hot water is all beneficial for the person. Rabbi Nizal says, however, if the water is ice cold or it's very cold, that's not good for this process that we're talking about. Ki oz mayo metarshi lahanekovimanal. Because then, if the water is freezing cold, then that water causes the pores to close up. And just the opposite, it locks in this sweat, not allowing it to escape. And it seems this is part of a person's normal taking care of the body, that on a daily basis, it is very healthy for the person to give these pores a chance to open up, release the sweat, and then close them up again where they're cleaned. Aval kishein hamayim karamoid, but if the water is not very cold, azai hatvilo bohem toivamoid, then dipping oneself in such water is very, very healthy. Now here again we know this is another branch of the Torah that we mention on Shabbos, that the word Torah is miloshen choiro, meire derech. The Torah is supposed to teach a person a way of life. Part of this way of life includes taking care of the physical body of the person. We know that in the Torah, there's laws as to how a person is supposed to get up. that when a person opens up their eyes in the morning, the Gemara says in Gittin, that if a person would want to start the day with a bang quickly and jump out of bed quickly, the Gemara says that that's sakona, it's dangerous. That when you first open your eyes, you're supposed to pause for a few seconds, and that pause gives the body a chance to adjust itself. Then, once you've had that pause, then you're supposed to try to move quickly and going ahead with what you're doing. Then the Gemara trains us as to what the best times are for a person to train the body to go to the bathroom, and how often a person should wash themselves, and where to wash, and what part of the body to wash first, what part to wash second and third, and so on and so forth. That we give more importance to the head than to other parts of the body. Out of respect for the neshama, when a person showers or bathes themselves, they're supposed to wash the head first and then move down to the body throughout the other parts of the body in less significance. In terms of giving priority to the right side over the left side, which puts a person into a position to receive the kindness of Hashem, which is always associated with the right. And so many other thousands, millions of different pieces of advice and hadracha, guidance, that Hashem has given us through the Torah in terms of how to live properly, both Baruchnius and Begashmius. Here's a case where Rabbeinu Zal is addressing this topic of mikveh also from a physical standpoint, that besides all the ruchnius, the spiritual benefits, where the Arizal says that part of a Jew opening up his mind to be able to comprehend secrets of Torah, the Arizal says in order for a Jew to be available to that, one of the minimum requirements is mikveh, that a person must go to the mikveh on a regular basis. Plus many, many other things that we know that this serves as a tikkun for and as an improvement for. But here Rabbeinu Zal is addressing this based on the fact that obviously there were doctors in those days who would advise people not to go to the mikveh for health reasons. And Rabbeinu Zal is coming out very strongly here against that and telling us that adarabba, just the opposite. From a physical standpoint, going to the mikveh regularly is very, very healthy. That's point number one made in this Torah. Now Rav Nosson Zal adds, Gam kvar mavur, it has already been explained in other places in our Sforim, She'ein ho'avoidos v'sigufim she'koiren ho'revanya mazikin klal, that all the difficult items that a Jew undertakes in serving Hashem, whether it's walking a great distance to go to shul, or whether it be any person being in a stuffy, being in a packed shul for Rosh Hashanah, or be it any other type of stress that a person accepts in terms of serving Hashem, which are all included in the Yiddish word horavanya. Horavanya means difficult struggle, that these things do not hurt a person at all whatsoever. These things cannot hurt a person. All the difficulty and stress and strain and struggle that a person undergoes in serving Hashem can't hurt the person. And if we find that a person is hurt in any way by serving Hashem or through sigufim, sigufim means specifically accepting pain in the service of Hashem, whether it means fasting excessively or any type of pain or strain that's involved in serving Hashem, if we see that a person is being hurt by this in any way, zehu rak machmas gadlus, it's only because the person is not pure in their humbleness, in their modesty towards Hashem. If the person feels any type of greatness or arrogance at all whatsoever from their serving Hashem, then it's possible for the Satan, for physical harm or any other type of harm, to attach itself to the person. Whereas if a person is pure in this respect, if a person is able to elevate themselves to such a point where they serve Hashem with complete anova, complete modesty, where they don't feel any wrong type of godless at all whatsoever, they don't feel any wrong type of greatness or arrogance or big shoddiness in their doing a mitzvah, in their serving Hashem, in such an instance, Rabbeinu Zal says, it's impossible for a mitzvah or a siguf, a pain, or a horavanya, any type of struggle in serving Hashem, to hurt the person. This is the whole key. And again, in receiving this advice, obviously we're being told that there is such a possibility, that this is something that does affect people, that there are people who are harmed in Avodas Hashem because of the fact that the Satan will make an attempt to mix in personal pniyos, personal desire for kavod and other things into the Avodas Hashem, into the mitzvahs, into the serving of Hashem that a person does. And we're being alerted here to the fact to be aware of this, and that if a person wants to ensure themselves, if a person wants to protect themselves, you want to know that you're protected, that there's no such thing as any aspect of Avodas Hashem harming you in any way, this is the solution. You have to see to it to include in your serving Hashem constant pleas for anova, to be zecher that there shouldn't be any wrong type of gadlus included in my serving Hashem, but rather to be zecher to true purity. And this we see that especially when it comes to the pinnacle of tefillah, when it comes to the high point in the tefillah of Shachris, that we say that's the most important tefillah, because that's where we put on talis and tefillin, and it's the longest tefillah, and in many, many respects it's more important than the other two. We see that before a person enters into the highest world, the Olam HaAtzilus, which we believe we enter into when we say the Shmoneh Esrei, that's the reason the Arizal says why a Jew takes three steps backward and then three steps forward upon beginning the Shmoneh Esrei. The reason is that the taking of the three steps backwards symbolizes that we believe that we're exiting from anything physical at all whatsoever, even from the spiritual worlds. And taking the three steps forward represents that we're entering into literally the Atzilus, the closest point that a Jew could reach in getting close to Hashem. Before we embark on such an aliyah, we lower ourselves, we humble ourselves, and we say those words to Hashem, V'oizer dalim, v'oin alam Yisrael be'shav ha'melo. We humble ourselves. The words of tefillah that we say there is, we refer to ourselves as being very, very impoverished, and that we want to present this image in standing before Hashem of this very extreme type of humbleness. Why? So that we shouldn't be harmed at all along the way. A person realizes that they're climbing to a very high place, and there is an element of sakona involved. The protection against the sakona comes from this item, comes through the anova, by making sure that there shouldn't be any godless at all mixed in with it. Baruch Hashem.
Is it anyone who gets like an athlete's foot or pink eye going to the mikvah, it's only because of godless?
I don't know if that's included here. Meaning, here Rabbi Nezal was discussing the specific issue of horavanya, the personal strain. For example, going into a hot mikveh is painful to a degree. There's an element of pain involved there. Or going into a cold mikveh, and we know that there are people that would say that this pain has a risk factor associated with it, that it could harm the person. Rabbi Nezal said that that aspect, the horavanya, the only time that could hurt a person is if there's godless involved in the person's avodas Hashem.
The first one says, mikvah eino mazeh.
Right, that's the mikvah. The athlete's foot is not necessarily related to the mikvah. I'm talking from a physical standpoint only, from what we've heard from people that are knowledgeable about this. They say that generally that comes from the floor leading to the mikvah. That was the dampness of the floor and the fact that people walking there, the fact that the floor is damp there and people walk there without slippers or without things, and there are people that have infections on their feet and they walk in that place and the germs from the infection remain on the floor, and somebody else walking on that same floor with bare feet can pick up that infection.
The pink eye is not directly from the water?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know. Not knowledgeable enough in that. But here I believe Rabbi Nezal was addressing more the specific the specifics of the mitzvah itself, not the infection, not something that's being transferred through a medium of a mitzvah.
If I had one Israel, once I had a skin rash, and he called me a certain lotion on, I said to him, am I allowed to go to the mitzvah? He said, as long as I don't have an open infection, I shouldn't worry about it.
Could be that's an example of something like this, where if it were, in other words, where we're drawing a line between two items. We're drawing a line between an open wound, where there it's very, very obvious that something like this could be more harmful, versus something closed. Now, before we get very involved, this is not a biology class. I'm the furthest thing imaginable from a doctor, you know, etc. So I don't want to get too much into this. If we're going to stick to basic things related to the Torah, very gladly. Other than that,
how would this compare to the concept we had in the past about going to do a mitzvah, not being harmed while doing a mitzvah, but yet if there's danger involved, in other words, not to go there? The story with Shmuel Hanavi when he was told to go anoint David HaMelech.
Same thing. In other words, that definitely goes together with this. Rabbeinu Zal was not talking about a mikveh that's heated up to 213 degrees, and a person going in and saying, well, this is Arboim Sur, it's a kosher mikveh, and I'm going in for the purposes of mikveh, there's no reason why this should harm me in any way. That's not what he's talking about within certain limits that a person understands. He's obviously talking about a certain degree of pain or a certain degree of difficulty that there are people that would say, why should I do that? That could be harmful to the health. And in certain instances, we say that that's nonsense. That if it's within certain boundaries, it's not a problem. For example, one thing we know that doctors say and the Torah talks about is that sudden changes could be something that's very, very harmful to the body. For example, if a person first goes into a very, very hot mikveh and then jumps straight from there into a cold mikveh, as there are people that do, that could be harmful if the change is too sudden. And again, depending on the health of the person, a person has to get to know their own limitations. Unquestionably, part of this has to do with the purity of a person's intent. If a person's kavanah is really, really 100% lishmo, and a person isn't showing godless and assuming that the teva should be changed for them, that I'm going to go into water that could burn the skin and I want a miracle to happen that it shouldn't burn me, that's the concept of being samech al hanes, which you're not allowed to. We are talking about within certain boundaries here. Person shouldn't run in hot weather. The question is, as far as an example like this of running in hot weather, that's not healthy. The answer is, here again, it's a case of extremes. If a person runs a little bit, it's very healthy because that causes sweat. And the sweating is a healthy process which removes this poison from the body. However, if it's very hot outside, for example, those people that are privileged to live in countries, in the Middle Eastern countries like Eretz Yisrael, or these places, where during the summer sometimes it's very hot, then it's possible that 5 minutes of running here could be the equivalent of an hour in another place, where it could be, a person could enter into sakona much more easily, could be dangerous much more easily. Rabbeinu Zal didn't say that cold water is dangerous. He said that if the water is very cold, then the water closes up the pores. Right? That's not to say that besides that, they didn't wash with warm water or with hot water. You understand? As we're talking specifically about this sweating process, this process of opening the pores, which is a necessary item and a healthy item. Rabbeinu Zal saying, when a person goes into a mikveh, if the water is warm, it helps for this process. Now, naturally, going into a freezing cold mikveh is part of this sigufim, which Rabbeinu Zal said that if a person knows that they don't have any feeling of gadlus, this is something that should not harm the person in any way.
What about the Arizal? That and that's called so. Why should this be an excuse not to go in the Arizal's mikveh?
No, not necessarily, because the question of the Arizal's mikveh, which is a natural mikveh in Tzfas in the mountains where the water there is pure and it's very cold, there, if there is any aspect of negativeness in the fact that the water is cold, there's a very, very big outweighing positive in the fact that that is the Arizal's mikveh. That's a mikveh that the Arizal himself used to tovel in, number one. And number two, the Arizal did write about that mikveh that any Jew that would tovel there would not leave the world without doing tshuva. So again, we know that it has a certain plus that far outweighs this minus. Let's hold it over here for now, on this Torah. Obviously, there's more to say. If a person has a question, something that they're not sure of here, this is part of where a Jew needs guidance. If there's a choice to go to a mikveh that's very unclean, or going to a mikveh that's cleaner physically, naturally it's advisable to go to the cleaner one, etc. All of these types of items. Here's where there's a concept of godel shimush shel Torah yesem limudo, that as much as a person could learn from a sefer, sometimes a person has to be attached to a rabbi, a physically living rabbi, that sets an example whereby if those that are privileged to be attached to somebody like that, you get to see by what he does sometimes, much more so, that much clearer picture than you might get necessarily from looking into a sefer.
I think corpses out of the mikveh in Borough Park.
People that passed out.
We spoke about 2 years ago, Rahman Aslan, a man, either his blood pressure was too high or his heart wasn't good, he went into the very hot mikveh. And that was like the end of it.
So we see this is a case where a person has to be able to know themselves. And this is something that you learn again in being with people. You find that there are people who enjoy a hot mikveh better, and it's more normal for them and natural for them to take higher intensity of heat. And another person, that same body of water could be sakona to them. Now, there's no question at all, this I once heard from our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha, that as far as a very cold mikveh, it's very rare that a person could be harmed by jumping into, not going from hot to cold, but just jumping into a very cold mikveh. It's very rare that that should harm the person by itself. Whereas, chas v'shalom, a mikveh that's very hot, to try to take that on suddenly, there definitely is an element of sakona. It definitely is a case that if your skin is sensitive, or if your body is sensitive, chas v'shalom, it could definitely do physical damage. No, I want to hold it over here for now. Torah Kuf Chof Dalet in Likutei Moran. This is a very important Torah in that it gives us an insight to something that Rabbi Nezal was known to have done. Those people that have read many of Rabbi Nezal's Sforim know that the way Rabbi Nosenzal paints a picture, that there were different times that they were walking with Rabbi Nezal, and he would stop suddenly in the middle of a walk, and he would deliver a shiur. And throughout the time that he was discussing this item of Torah, whatever it is, he would stand still, he would stay in his place and not move until he completed the item. Then he would move. So too in the Gemara, those people that are used to learning Gemara know that there are many, many cases in the Gemara where the Gemara says that this law was taught in the doorway of this and this house. There are certain instances, it's not always, but there are maybe tens of cases in the Gemara where it discusses the exact location where an item of Torah was said. And there's no question at all that if there weren't significance to the place, it wouldn't be mentioned. What do we care today, 2,000 years later, if this halacha was said in a shul, in a beis medrash, or in the doorway of somebody's house? Of what significance could that be to us? The answer is, if it weren't significant, it wouldn't be mentioned. There definitely must be a connection between the place where this event is happening and what's actually happening. But here, Rav Nosson Zal addresses a certain aspect of this. Rav Nosson Zal says, Shomati bishmoi, I heard, told over in Rabbeinu Zal's name, She'omar, that he said, שלפעמים מגיע לאותו מהרהור תשובה והשתוקקות להשם יתברך באיזה מקום. There are times when a person is suddenly struck with a thought of tshuva, with a desire to want to come close to Hashem, and it comes to a person in a certain place. A person could be riding on a train or on a bus, or a person could be going for a walk, or it could happen a person sitting in their kitchen living room and suddenly a thought shoots into the person's mind, or a feeling enters the person's heart, where there's a sudden desire of wanting to come close to Hashem, a hirhur tshuva, or a yearning to Hashem. And Rabbi Nosson Zal says, I heard people say in Rabbi Nazal's name, שצורך שום באויסי המוקוים דייקו להסחזק בוזה ההירור תשובה והשתייקיקוס, that the person has to see to it, exactly in that place where this thought comes to the person, this thought or feeling, to see to it, to do something with it. כגוין לדבר שום איזה דיבורים של תחינויס ובקושויס, whether it be to say a few words to Hashem, to say a few words of tefillah to Hashem, in that exact place, oy divrei hishtoikikus, or to express words of yearning, bepeh, with a person's mouth, or belave, or sometimes where it's not possible to express it with your mouth. But let's say to let go, in a sense, even in your own heart, to open the throttle and to let it out completely. If a person feels this hearer of tshuva coming on and it's small, to stretch it and go as far as you can with it, right in that place where it came, right in that physical location. V'lo yamtin, and the person shouldn't wait. Sometimes a person might think, fine, I feel this now. You know what? I'm going to go walk to a shul now, and I'm going to go there and sit and learn. Or I'm going to wait till I get home, and then I'm going to do something with this feeling, this inspiration that I suddenly felt. Rabbi Nazal warned that the person should not wait. V'lo yozuz mimkoimo, and the person shouldn't move from that spot. A person should see to it to do some maisa with that hirhur tshuva that came to the person in that place. אף על פי שאין זה המוקוים מוכן לכך. Even if the place is not a place that's designated for tefillah or for Torah or for this type of thing, still, if you see that Hashem has sent you, while you were standing in this spot, Hashem sent you a thought of an inspiration, a desire to come close to Hashem, something like that, to see to it, to stay in that spot and do something with it, and then leave. Then it's possible to leave, but not to leave that spot without having taken advantage of this feeling that came to you. Kegoin, for example, shaloi b'mokom kviyas l'toiru tefila, for example, if the place where the person was struck with this thought or this feeling is not a place that's been designated for Torah or for tefila, it's a house, it's a backyard, it's a street, it's walking in the middle of the street, it's a train, wherever it could be, rak bederech hiluchoi ukiyotze, but rather it's a place that a person encountered in their travel, they were walking, they were riding, wherever it is, ki kisheyozuz mimkoimoi yochoi lihiyoiz sheyifsoik. Rabbi Nazal said, because you should know that sometimes if you leave that spot, it's possible that the feeling will suddenly terminate, it'll stop, it'll come to an end. Because sometimes it's bedafka, that exact location that the person's in, that caused the person to experience this inspiration. This the Arizal talks about, and our Rebbe Zichron Avrocha mentioned this in Shiurim, that there are times that a person is going in a certain direction, and a person gets lost, or a person finds that they go out of their way, they make a wrong turn and they go three blocks out of their way, and a person suddenly realizes that they're off, they're not where they intended to go. And these things don't just happen for no reason. Obviously, there was a reason for the person to have to pass through a certain spot over there. Generally, it's because the person has some type of tikkun that they have to make in that location. They have to correct something. There could be a part of their neshama that's trapped in that place, And that if this person will now walk through that area, and while walking through there, do a mitzvah, be thinking a thought of Kedusha, or saying a tefillah to Hashem, or doing some, or walking through there wearing a pair of tzitzis, or having a bris milah, even those are certain aspects of tikkunim. Naturally, depending on what type of tikkun is needed, that's what determines how much active work the person has to do to affect the tikkun. But in any case, Rabbi Nizal says, when a person finds themselves in a certain place, and they suddenly feel themselves aroused with a feeling for Hashem, to see to it, to take advantage of it in that place itself. Not to leave that place without having used that inspiration. V'chein mimenu zichron l'vrocha bi'atzmoi, Rabbi Nizal writes, and so too by Rabbi Nizal himself, ro'inu inyan koze kamo pomim, we saw this type of thing take place many, many times. Shelufa omim nishar oimed be'emtza habayis. There were times that Rabbi Nizal was walking in his house, and he suddenly came to a halt right in the middle of the house. He stopped walking, stopped in a place. V'diper imonu, and he spoke with us. V'gila lanu toira niflo, and he revealed to us a super chiddush. Or he had a very wonderful discussion, some outstanding discussion about Torah, about religion. Or he revealed to us wondrous paths to come close to Hashem. And he gave us, he passed on to us outstanding inspiration. And we saw, we observed that Rabbi Nizal was reluctant to leave that spot until he finished completely what he wanted to say or what he wanted to do. V'chein hoyo kamo pomim. This was something that we saw many, many times. And obviously Rabbi Nizal's Talmidim understood that there was something important about staying in that spot, that spot where the inspiration came or where the discussion began, there was something important about it. Now, this is not to say that there were times that Rabbi Nizal spoke Divrei Torah while he was walking and continued to walk. It seems that there are times that that's what was done, that the talking, the Divrei Torah, whatever, was done bedavka ubelechtucha vaderech, in middle of walking while continuing to walk, whereas there were times that there was a certain burst of inspiration, something substantial, something solid that came to Rabbi Nizal, or to a Talmud Chacham, or to any person, in a certain spot, where we're being advised there to know that at times, it's very important to remain rooted to that spot, and to do something with it before you leave that spot.
This is related to a point that once you mentioned that a person has a certain time in his life, I think, even B'Shas you read it, where he's going to have a tefillah that'll pick up everything. So it could be possible at such a point that it's like a warning that this could be the time, that's why you shouldn't stop, you shouldn't move till you...
I don't know if that's tied into this really. What he's referring to is the fact that Rabbi Nizal says in a certain turn of Kutimran, the fact that it, based on the Zohar Kodesh, that each and every single person has their moment within a day, within a week, within a month, within a year, within a lifetime, their special moment. Where if a Jew, when that special moment of theirs comes along, if the person is doing something related to serving Hashem, davening or learning or doing something like that, a person in 1 second can affect a tikkun that they couldn't do for months or for years. That tefillah that a person says at that time can fix up and elevate thousands of tefillahs that the person had said throughout their whole life that weren't able to be clinched up until that point. That's one thought. Here he's talking about, that's talking about a time, a special time. Here Rabbi Nizal's talking about a place, a location, that there are sometimes that the place itself is goyrim, the inspiration. The fact that you're standing in a certain place and this inspiration comes to you, you should know that the inspiration is tied into the place that you're in. And if you leave that place, it's possible that the inspiration will suddenly stop. And you'll find out that it stopped because he left that place. It has to do sometimes with sparks of Kedusha that are, I said that that's one reason. That could be one reason for this. That there could be actually neshamos or something needs sparks of Kedusha that are exactly in that place and need a certain tikkun that could be accomplished through your tefillah, through your dvar Torah or something like that. And if you leave that place, it's not needed anymore, or it can't do what it was supposed to do, so the feeling leaves. There are definitely places that are called Mekoymos HaMetunafos where a Jew is not permitted to think at all about Torah or about mitzvahs, and if a person finds thoughts coming to them at that time, a person has to avoid it. A person has to close their mind not to allow those thoughts to enter.
And also with the Torah before, is that good? What is their chance? And a person who wants to go swimming, and when the swimming pool is rainwater.
Not for now. Let's see if maybe we'll start this next Torah, and we'll see where we go with it. It's a shame. Torah Kuf Chof Hei in Likut Imran. This is actually the last chapter in the entire Sefer, the Likut Imran, both sections. Me Inyan Amiras Tehillim, regarding the important item of saying Tehillim, Diber Im Echod, Rabbeinu Zal once spoke to one of his students, Vi Omar Loi, and Rabbeinu Zal said to that person, She'ikar Amiras Tehillim, Loimar kol mizmoyri tehillim al atzmoi. Rabbi Nazal said to this person that when a yid is saying tehillim, and in tehillim we find that we're talking about Dovra Melech, and a lot of it seems to be discussions about things that took place in the past, not related to me or not related to us. And Rabbi Nazal told this person that the main effectiveness in saying tehillim is when a person says Tehillim about themselves. When a person sees to it that all the tefillos that they're saying there, they apply it to their own personal needs and situation. Limtzo yis atzmoi b'soich kol mizmor u'mizmor. And Rabbi Nazal said a Jew is supposed to find themselves within every single chapter in the Sefer Tehillim. V'sho'al oisai zechon levrocho. And this student asked Rabbi Nazal, Eich, how do you do this? In other words, he asked Rabbi Nazal to clarify, what do you mean here? What do you mean about finding myself in the Sefer Tehillim? U'piresh loy Rabbi Nazal k'tzas. And Rabbi Nazal explained it to the person a little bit. What did he explain? Ki kol ha-melchomois she-bikesh tovar ha-melech olav ha-sholem she-atzileu ha-shem yisborach mehem, that all the different wars that Dovid HaMelech experienced in his life, and in these paragraphs of Tehillim, he begs Hashem that Hashem should rescue him, that Hashem should save him, that Hashem should allow him to come out victorious in these wars. Hakol tzrichem lefaresh li'atzmoy al melchemes hayetzahora v'chayeloysov. A Jew has to interpret this about themselves, that all of these mizmorim of Tehillim are actually said about me, and they're said about my Milchemes Hayetzer. Because when we talk about a war, when we talk about a war of any significance in this war, physical battles aren't really that significant. The main Milchoma in this world is the Milchemes Hayetzer, the war that every single Jew goes through with their own personal Yetzer. And so too the war that Klal Yisrael goes through as a whole with the Yetzirah that's working against the whole Klal Yisrael as a nation. For example, we know that the Zohar HaKadosh says that each and every single nation of the world there is a concept of the United Nations in Shemayim, in heaven, where each and every single nation of the world has representation above. They have an angel in heaven that supports them, that represents them before Hashem. What about the Jewish nation? What about Klal Yisrael? They also have an angel that represents them and defends them and supports them. Their defending angel is Kaviyochel Hashem himself. This is one of the interpretations that the Sifrei Kabbalah give to a statement in the Gemara in Ksubas, where the Gemara says, "Kol hador be'eretz Yisrael, doime kemi sheyesh lo yeloka, v'chol hador b'chutz loretz, doime kemi she'ein lo yeloka." The Gemara says that any Jew that's privileged to be living in Eretz Yisrael, that Jew has Hashem over them. And any Jew that doesn't live in Eretz Yisrael does not have Hashem over them. And the Mefarshim asks, what does this mean? Are we saying that Hashem is limited to Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is not literally. Literally, no. However, in this respect, in the respect that those Jews that are zeichet to be living in Eretz Yisrael, whenever there is a conflict taking place in the world between other countries going up against Eretz Yisrael, there is a corresponding conflict taking place above, on high, among these angels that are coming to speak against Klal Yisrael. Who is standing up in defense of Klal Yisrael, specifically in Eretz Yisrael? Hashem himself. And this is why those that are within the framework of Eretz Yisrael, they are considered to have Hashem over them more so than those that are outside of Eretz Yisrael. So we see that Klal Yisrael as a whole is undergoing this struggle, this milchama against these other angels. We have examples of this where the Gemara says that when the Jews were crossing through the Red Sea, the Sar Shel Yam came with a protest, Halolo Evdei Avodah Zorah, Halolo Evdei Avodah Zorah. We find an angel getting up and speaking up against Klal Yisrael. And we find Hashem being forced to defend Bnei Yisrael before these angels. This is part of Hashem's concept of justice and fairness, allowing this representation among these for all these other nations and for the Klal Yisrael. That's as a nation, that's on a large scale. And we know even more important than that is the fact that each and every single Jew is representative of the whole Klal Yisrael. Each and every single Jew is undergoing this constant war and turmoil and struggle with their own personalized malach, with this Yetzer Hara, with this Satan. And Rabbein Azal says that you should know that Dovid HaMelech actually put himself up as a shliach, as a messenger, as a symbol, and as a representative for Klal Yisrael in these tefillos. When Dovid HaMelech designed the Sefer Tehillim, he did it in such a way where it was done with the Ruach HaKodesh. This the Gemara says in Pesachim and in other places very clearly, that the words of the Sefer Tehillim were designed with Ruach HaKodesh, which means they're alive. They're not just limited to 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago when Dovid HaMelech lived at that time, but rather these words are alive and pertain to today, and they adjust themselves, they modify themselves to today's situations, to 1988, to 1989, whatever year it is. And if a Jew, when saying Tehillim, has in mind that these tefillos that Dovid HaMelech was saying about his own personal tribulations and wars that he went through, he wasn't really, his main concern in terms of davening to Hashem for help wasn't so much help against his physical enemies, but it was the struggle that he knew he was going through against his spiritual enemies. The Gemara tells us, in the Zohar HaKadosh says, that Dovid HaMelech was born dead. In a sense, he was born without any years at all. This is how strongly the Satan was against this neshama. The Satan knew that this neshama is in a position to affect Klal Yisrael more so than just about any other Jew. He literally represented the kingdom of Hashem, the kingdom of Klal Yisrael. And therefore he was born, in a sense, without any years at all. And he had to first have years given to him by Odom Arishayim, and that's part of the reason why the Sultan worked so hard to get Odom and Chava to eat from the Eitz Hadas, so that the years that Odom would attempt to give to Dovid HaMelech would be pogum, would be spoiled and defective. This is why we find that Odom Arishayim was told, Ki biyoyim achol chamimenu mois tomus, that on the day that you'll eat from the Tree of Wisdom, you will die. We know that a day, by Hashem's counting, is 1,000 years. We say in Tehillim, Ki elef shonim b'enecho ki yoim, that 1,000 years in Hashem's eyes is like a day. So even if Hashem wanted this curse to go into effect against Adam HaRishon, that on the day that he would eat from the Eitz Hadas, he would have to die, that allowed him at least 1,000 years of life. Why is it that he ended up living only 930 years? The Sifrei Kabbalah tell us because Adam HaRishon saw, Baruach HaKodesh, that the neshama of Dovid HaMelech, who was one of his most important ancestors, did not have any life to it, that neshama was dark. It had no years to it at all whatsoever, and therefore Adam HaRishon graciously gave of his own years 70 years for Dovid HaMelech. However, when Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, automatically these years became nifkam, became defective, and had to first be given over a second time through Avraham Yitzchok, Yaakov, and Yosef HaTzadik. We once discussed this cheshbon, that if we see that Yitzchok Avinu lived for 180 years, it means naturally his father Avram Avinu, who was at least as big a tzaddik, should also have lived 180 years, at least 180 years. And we find that he lived only 175. The reason is because Avram Avinu gave away 5 of his own years towards Dovid HaMelech, to make up this deficit, this defectiveness in Dovid HaMelech's years. Then we find Yaakov Avinu lived to be 147 years old. 147, and he also certainly should have lived to be as long, this 175, as long as Avram Avinu. So we find also the difference there was tacked on to Dovid HaMelech's years. Yosef HaTzadik, the fact that he lived to 110 years, when we know the Torah says, Eile toldos Yaakov Yosef, that Yosef HaTzadik was supposed to be a spitting image of Yaakov Avinu, the deficit there, these three together, Avraham, Yaakov and Yosef were the ones who made up the lack in Dovid HaMelech's years. So all of this, all the disadvantages that Dovid HaMelech was working with, all of this he expressed in his Sefer Tehillim, his whole struggle for survival, for spiritual survival, and all the things that the Sotan did to him during his lifetime to try to knock him down, the fact that people spoke up and said he's not even Jewish. Doeg HaDoimig wanted to come up with a lumdus to prove that Dovid HaMelech isn't acceptable into the Klal Yisrael as a Jew. All of this, Dovid HaMelech expressed in his Sefer Tehillim, his own struggle against the Yetzirah, against the Malach HaMoves, which was his archenemy. And therefore, Rabbein Azal said that a Jew, when saying Tehillim, has to apply everything that's being said, everything that Dovid HaMelech is saying about his own struggle against the Malach HaMoves, against the Yetzirah, a Jew saying Tehillim has to apply that to their own personal struggle against the Malach HaMoves and Yetzirah. Vishaloi Soi, and this student asked Rabbein Azal, Eich Yifareish La'atzmoi B'hapsukim Shedovid HaMelech Olav HaSholem Shabeach Esatzmoi. What about those psukim in Tehillim where Dovid HaMelech is praising himself? How should a Jew apply that to himself? It would seem that at least that part of it applies only to Dovid HaMelech, who was a super, super tzaddik, so he was able to say certain good things about himself. But if you're telling me that when I'm saying Tehillim, I'm supposed to apply whatever it says there to me, I'm supposed to make believe that I'm the one who composed these paragraphs, and it's all talking about me, how do I apply it to those paragraphs where Dovid HaMelech is praising himself? Kegoin, for example, Shomro Nafshi Ki Chosidoni. For example, there is a paragraph in Tehillim where Dovid HaMelech says to Hashem, Hashem, please watch over me, because I am a chosid, because I am very religious, I'm very righteous. Or other examples like this in the Sefer Tehillim, where Dovid HaMelech is praising himself. Heishiv Loi, and Rabbein Azal answered this student. And this is where we'll hold it for the next Shia Mitzvashem. This is a question that was asked. This is the last chapter in Likutei Moran, where this question was asked to Rabbein Azal, and saying to Tehillim, if you're saying that in the Sefer Tehillim, a person's supposed to have in mind that everything that it says here is about me, relates to me, what about those places in Tehillim where David HaMelech is saying certain praises about himself? How is it conceivable for a Yid that knows his own shortcomings, and we know that we, in no way in the world do we have a license to compare ourselves to David HaMelech, how am I allowed to say those words and chas v'shalom think that that relates to me at all whatsoever? We'll take up this answer. This answer will be the conclusion of Likutei Moran. Mitzvah Hashem.